Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people right across the country. I would also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, it's beautiful. Blue sky, sunshine. That big strong wind from yesterday blowing everything around and stuff seems to have gone away, gone somewhere else to blow. So it's a beautiful day, another day in paradise. Wherever we are, I think we've got to be in paradise when you're on Aboriginal land. But, I'm a bit disappointed with last night's footy game. See, the Cowboys go down by 1 point. If only JT had his kicking boot on last night, it would have been a different story. But anyway, them's the breaks. Still got the bunnies up there kicking butt. Well, my guest today talking to me via telephone is Mr. John Winnetong. John, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm well, Tiger. It's a beautiful day here in Cairns as well, mate.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And I too was very disappointed with the send-off of the North Queensland player and a few penalties against us last night too, mate.
Yeah, it looked like Jamal Idris was calling the shots last night with the send-off. Taking charge he was.
Somebody's got him, mate.
The big bugger? Yeah. it was a good game, right down tight to the whistle sort of thing.
It was fantastic, mate.
Yeah, it was.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Talented man, that JT, isn't he?
Oh, by gee, yeah. Yeah, and a good young man too, you know, a really good, good style of a young man. Yeah.
Yeah, a good role model, mate.
He is.
For our mob.
That's right, yes.
One of the best.
Brother, tell us your mob, your country.
My mob is the Cubby Cubby mob from down around Bauple Mountain near you fellas.
Yeah, right.
Through the my mum, the Minicons, and her mum actually spoke the language.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. When my mum passed away recently, before she passed away, I took the time to go down for a couple of months and do her life story. And she was telling me about the Cubby Cubby mob walking from Bunya Mountains up to Lomead near Merionvale to visit her mother, who was their mob.
That's
fantastic. Mate.
That's great. All right. Yeah, very fortunate to be able to get that opportunity to spend time with her and write down a story.
Oh, well, I had to do it for the grandkids, mate. Otherwise, they'd never know where we came from.
Of course. My mother's mother used to tell stories of walking. She was a Kungaloo woman or Gungaloo woman from up around around Rockhampton way there. And she used to tell stories of walking with her mum down to Bunya Mountains and down to this area as a child, walking with her mother. From up there, you know. So, yeah, similar
apparently,
stories with that generation.
Before Captain Cook and Co. got here, when those bunya nuts ripened every 3 or 4 years, they had a big gathering there at the Bunya Mountains, and they also had an Olympics of sorts.
Oh, right, a big sports event type thing.
And there was a game that they played called Burundi, which was very much like our tackle rugby league these days.
Really? Yeah.
60 or 70 people aside and played from dawn till dusk.
Really? There's stamina there. All right.
Yeah, I would love to be at one of those.
Yeah, be a great spectacle. So where did you grow up as a young fella?
Me, I grew up around Gladstone area, Gladstone, Central Queensland, around that area before Gladstone was a industrial waste disposal unit.
that's a good way of putting it. A waste disposal. They destroyed the place, the harbour, the waterways?
Place.
It was, yes, yes.
Yeah, when I was a kid, you could catch anything you wanted pretty well anywhere.
That's right.
And, they got red spot there now, haven't they?
They have, yeah. that's one of the things they've got, yeah. Yeah, now my dad used to take me over that way, the Coliseum. There was a place called the Coliseum.
That's right. Yep, Coliseum, good fishing spot.
Oh, mate.
Plenty of sandflies and mosquitoes too.
Exactly, yes. Now, he had a little fishing hut with one of his mates over there, and we'd go over there.
That's right, yeah. A lot of the locals from around that area had shacks down there.
Yep, the little fishing shacks, yeah. By gee, man, beautiful. Unbelievable.
I grew up and went to school down in Gladstone till junior, and like most Murray kids, the career counsellor told me I should be a boilermaker.
All right, there you go.
That was pretty funny, I think, back now, because I passed everything without really trying.
Yeah.
And only got to grade 10, but, I mean, I passed it without even,
without any real effort.
Or thought, really. Yeah. And the guy tells me to be a boilermaker, which my mother took on board and made me become. And I lasted for a good 12 months until my boss called me a little black so-and-so one day, and I said, well, you shouldn't have done that, mate. And he said, why is that? I said, because you just lost another apprentice.
Yeah, right.
And I hooked up to Mount Isa, and I got cousins up Mount Isa, all around the Isa way, and started working up there when I was 15 years old. So I've been in construction most of my life after that, because when you're a young fella, in our day and age, at 15, you either go to work or you... you leave home. What will
yes,
the two?
That's right.
There was no choice. You had to get money to pay for your way, and that's what I did.
So year 10 or junior, as you call it, that was your last year in high school.
10, junior, yeah.
Yeah. What year would that have been?
68. I think it was the year man stepped on the moon, wasn't it?
Was it 68 when he did that? Yeah, that was my last year of school over at Theodore and the Dawson there too. Yeah,
68. Oh, yeah, yeah. 10. I know Theodore well, actually.
Yeah, that was my last year.
Out near Woori.
Yeah. Mara, Banana, and around that area.
Yeah, so I worked in construction till I was about 23.
Mm.
And then my mum took off, decided she would leave me and my younger brother, Mark, who a lot of people would know, who's a doctor, one of the first
well-known doctors
in Queensland.
And father of those two well-known young ones there, out there
Joel
with their music.
Joel and Naomi,
yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And these other two aren't too far behind them either in famosity and talent, I can tell you.
Good one. Yeah.
Actually, Joel will be a doctor in a year.
Really?
I think it's under a year now.
Following the steps of his father.
Yeah, well, he taught at the Newcastle Uni for quite a few years, and suddenly decided he'd become a doctor too, and
wow.
He nearly is.
By gee, that's fantastic.
Unbelievable. I put it all down to Mum. She said... Yeah. Just go and do it. Don't talk.
Mm.
Stop talking. Just go and do it, son. That's the best way.
Don't be another
gunner.
Everybody
will know you from your actions. Eh?
Yes. Oh, well done. Yeah. Now, what about yourself? Did you go on to any further education later in life?
Mate. I, the Lotus Glen holiday camp up here?
Yes.
I built that in 1986.
You worked on that one, didn't
you? As a construction worker. Yeah, I was the foreman, rigger, crane driver and stuff there.
Uh-huh.
And I broke my back badly. The scaffolding fell over and broke my back. And I had to get out of that line of work. I tried for another 4 years, but it was too hard.
Mm.
You know, young man's game, and I was getting older and my back was getting worse from all the injuries. So I got a job as a labourer at Central Queensland University in Rockhampton and carrying around AV equipment for lecturers and students for presentations and stuff. Back in the video day, so big, huge TVs and video machines, 40 video machines supplying the university. I worked there for 14 years. So I started as a labourer. I started studying about 4 years into that, and because I decided that all the professors and doctors and lecturers I was meeting weren't all that smart. They just persevered to get their degree.
Wouldn't it take you too long to work that out, eh? Wouldn't it have taken too long to work that
long,
out?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well done. So what did you do?
I went
for
a degree myself.
Yeah.
And I was very, very lucky that Central Queensland Uni supported me in going for that degree, but I worked for 10 years while I did the degree.
Oh,
so in the 14 years there, I started as labourer and then worked for the uni in their media section for 10 years. And I studied and got a degree in Aboriginal Studies and Literature,
all right,
which are my two favourite things.
Oh, yeah.
So after 12 years, I went from a labourer and I was lecturing for uni.
Nice change.
It was fantastic.
Nice change.
And something I would have never believed I could have done before. The accident sort of drove me towards that.
Yes.
And,
some doors close and other doors open, eh?
Yes. Well, my wife at the time suggested I go and get the job there and suggested I start studying. And I thought I was a rigger, crane driver, mate. I didn't believe I had the wherewithal really to do it until I met these professors and lecturers that had never worked a day in their lives and had come from a rich family, gone to uni, then gone to work in the uni. And I had a lot of life experience, so I passed everything with flying colours, which surprised me.
Oh, well done.
And so my brother started, Mark, he started studying to become a doctor at 36. I went back to uni at 35, I think.
Okay, yeah.
So that's sort of my background.
And you credit your mum with that, you're saying, like with the...
Well, mum left us at... I was 17, Mark was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And she left me to look after him in Gladstone and went and started up the Aboriginal Health Program in Mount Isa in about 71, 72, I think it was.
Wow, okay.
She was the one to go out there and she didn't have a clue what she was doing. They got
pioneering days.
What are you going to do?
Pioneering days for black fellas in health in community, at community level, 71, 72.
Yeah. Well, she'd been out there. She went out and left us and went to work because we were old enough. And she wanted to help the mob, and she went out there with the Aboriginal Health Program, started it up, and then the Aboriginal Health Program built in Queensland from that.
Okay. By gee.
Now, there are other people in other cities and who were starting it, but Mum did the out west stuff, and she absolutely loved the people out there. And I've still got reams of photos of her working with all the kids and some of her stories on video when I did her life story. I've got some of the stories of her chasing kids and them hiding in the grass and under beds and in cupboards so they wouldn't have to go to school. But Mum just wouldn't take no for an answer. Her mum had 16 children and she made each and every one of them go to school every day.
Yeah.
And back in the day, this was early 1900s, Mum's mum bought a piece of land and got two of her children out of Woorabinda because she could write and read. And she realised the importance of that, and she made those 16 kids go to school. Well, every single one of those 16 kids were never labourers after that. They became managers of sheep stations and cotton farms and running service stations and became mechanics and fitters and turners. And it was a marvellous, marvellous thing.
What a story.
Mum's mum did as well, So, Tiger, three and a half years ago now, I couldn't work anymore. I was working with Noel Pearson. I met you.
That's right.
I think in Arakoon, working for the Arakoon News Strategy.
Mm.
And I ran into Noel Pearson and the COAG group up there. And I was teaching. I found that I couldn't teach the 15 to 21-year-old disaffected kids that had dropped out of school. I was trying to teach them how to edit digitally and make videos and stuff. And I was talking too fast. With a real bad Queensland accent, I'm afraid. And the kids, some of them, the English was second, third, fourth language. So I found a young man at the store in Arakoon who spoke four or five languages and English very well, pulled him away from the store, got him to be my 2IC, taught him how to edit digitally, and he taught them in WIC.
Wow, yeah.
And so when Noel and the COAG group came through, he was this guy out there teaching in WIC on one, the oldest languages in one of the newest technologies on a PowerPoint presentation with them, showing them how to do it, but speaking in WIC.
Wow. How great's that?
So Noel was at the time starting the Cape York Institute and had Macquarie Bank on board. A program of getting kids from the 16 communities in the Cape to boarding schools. And I'd been up in Arakoon working on the idea of why kids were falling out of school so quickly. When we started, I think in 2004, the completion and retention rate for just grade 8 from kids leaving the communities to come to boarding schools was 6%, just for grade 8.
Wow.
So we started the Higher Expectations Program back then in the start of 2005. Today, Tiger, there are over 25 kids from 16 communities on the Cape plus Palm Island and Yarrabah with university degrees.
Unbelievable.
From that program.
Yeah.
And they said it couldn't be done, but that's not true.
What did you put it down to, John, the fact that there was such a small attendance rate of the schools? I mean, there's a range of issues.
It wasn't rocket science. I went up and spoke to the communities. I went and spoke to the schools. I spoke to Qantas. I spoke to the buses that picked them up, the taxi drivers. I spoke to the parents. I spoke to everybody in every community and worked out that basically what it was homesickness.
Okay.
Kids who had an extended family and lived with them for the first 12 years of their life were suddenly expected to cope with a boarding school
environment
in a box, yeah, in a huge, massive new place.
Yeah.
So
that'd be a hell of a challenge, when you think about it. When you think about Aurukun particularly.
I would have hated to do it myself.
Exactly. But Aurukun particularly, I was blown out by it, those little kids running around speaking Wik and Wik Munkun and stuff. The language that was there, the culture that was there, blew me away, man.
The first day I had there, I laid in bed at night and a few families walked past speaking Wik,
yeah,
and I burst into tears. And my wife said, yeah, "What's wrong?" And I said, I didn't believe this would ever happen. Yeah. I never thought I'd ever hear that. They were just speaking it normally,
yep,
walking past my bedroom window.
And when you think about those little ones and their forefathers, the previous generations, thousands of generations of their mob lived on that land and in that area forever. And then when they get to be 12 or 13 or 14, they're forced to continue with their education, whether they wanted to or not, another thing. But to be forced to go away to a boarding school, I mean, gee, that'd be a hell of a challenge for them, because I don't think there was the support.
More balls than,
yep,
bloody Hitler, you know.
Yep.
To be honest with you, the way I look at it, I never had more respect for a group of youth in my whole life than those kids who are going away from those communities, because it was new. It was like going to an alien environment. To be honest with you, I had a young girl who didn't wash her clothes, her uniforms, but used to press them underneath a mattress because she didn't know how to use the washing machine and she wasn't game to ask anybody.
Yeah, right. Side,
you know?
Yeah.
And so those sort of things came up regularly. So what I found was that Macquarie allowed me, and Noel, allowed me basically to find out the problems. I wrote out a pile of solutions to all the problems I found. I sent them back to all the people I'd talked to. And then I said, let's go. We know what... There are solutions to these things, and I started organising our people from Cape York Institute and the HEP program to meet the kids, which nobody had been doing at airports, to support them and run them through what they're going to be meeting, what they're going to be doing. And then at the schools themselves, I got Indigenous local people in Brisbane, in Rockhampton, in Townsville, in Cairns, where the schools were situated, to be part of the program. So they got involved with the school, and if the kids were homesick, they could go out for a weekend to a Murray family locally and go fishing with them and eat rice and eat how they did at home and be welcomed by Indigenous people who understood them.
Get into a familiar environment.
And we paid them accordingly, as white people get paid for foster care, et cetera, which was a big thing because all the Murrays have been doing it off their own bat, free.
Mm,
and
course.
It costs money to pick them up and to run them around and to take them to events and to feed them all weekend.
Mm.
So that was one of the main things. But what came from that, Tiger, was that the schools suddenly decided that they needed to do NAIDOC Week, and they needed to have an elder from the community to open and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 90% of those, I think there's about 8 partner schools now, and 90% of them now celebrate NAIDOC Week. Lords Hill College in Brisbane had a young girl called Marika Bassini going there. She was the first ever girl and Aboriginal school captain in 85 years of their going. And wow. She did a double degree.
Oh, goodness. That Bassini name's a big name up there in Cape York. I met a couple of the old men, the old ringers and stockmen, old Paddy and people, you know. That's a big name up there. Over on the East Coast, I think they were, Cooktown, Hopewell way.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's where they're from, yeah.
And what's that young girl? What's that young
well-known
one?
Family because they work hard at for their people.
That's right. What's that young one doing? She got through that double degree and stuff?
Oh, she finished that. She would have been one of the first ones to come through, so she'd be out now. Yeah. And I think Rio Tinto offered her $1 million to work for.
Goodness me. Wouldn't it be good to be able to track them mob now, to follow up and just see where they are, those kids of
well,
those early times?
Well, I think NITV is the perfect, thing for that. That's what they're looking for, and I see they show a lot of Maori and Native American
other culture.
Stuff.
Yep.
Whereas we do have all these success stories now, and where
we
are
do.
They?
We
yeah,
do.
That's
You're right.
that's something. Tanya Major, was one of the people who worked with me and helped me with that whole program.
Yeah, and she grew up in Tanya.
I hope I'm not taking up too much time here, but
well, mate, we got a bit of time. We're taking up your time. You're trying to sort out a unit that's got to be sold so you can publish your books, and that's what we're going to talk about. Your writing, your recent these recent achievements
it,
of
mate.
Yours.
Well,
your writing
that was all leading to this. So
right.
basically,
let's take a short break for a song, and we'll
all
come
right,
back
mate.
And talk about this next stage of your journey, if you would, John. So I'll be back in just a minute after a song. We're talking to John Wenatong from Cairns, a cubby man, telling us how he got to this stage where he's writing stories and ready to publish. Now, John, tell us, how did you get to this now, ready to publish, telling these stories? Where'd these stories come from?
Hi, Tiger. Could we just... Do you mind very much if we just mention what we're talking about during the break there? Because I just think it's really important for people to know.
By all means.
We were just having a quick chat about the Constitution and being acknowledged in the Constitution. And to me and a lot of other of my mature Indigenous friends believe that that's just total crap. We don't need to be acknowledged. Everybody knows that we were here when Captain Cook got here. There's no need to do anything else. Just put it in and shut up.
That's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it because you're talking my language, but I've never had it articulated in this way.
Well, I'm angry about it. I can't sing, Tiger, I can't sing our national anthem anymore because I read the words and it says, we are young and free.
Mm.
We are ancient and free.
Mm.
So every time I try to sing young and free, that to me pisses on our people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't sing it anymore.
Yep.
Something's got to be done about that too.
Well, it's hard to
before
even stand up.
Worrying
not,
about
not,
this Constitution
of course.
Acknowledgement, I don't understand. Anyway, I just thought that was worth re-mentioning again, Tiger. But
no, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did mention it because we often get different comments and, there's only two views. One, either yes, it's a great thing, or two, it does nothing for us. It will change nothing. It is a white thing. It appeases white conscience.
That's right.
And that's it. So there's one of two views, and
yes,
I think the majority of our mob, I really do think
it
the majority.
It'll be sure when it goes in, it'll be legally phrased so that we can't
of
get
course.
Anything from it either or claim anything from it.
Of course.
I'll assure you right now.
Of course, yes. No, thanks
so
for that.
Tiger, three and a half years ago, I had to retire. I had terrible injuries. I had to get a new hip, and my back went on me, and I just... wasn't able to work anymore. So I left the HEP program and I was learning to walk again, basically, after the a new hip operation, which is pretty fantastic these days, those things. But I needed something to do, and my stepdaughter said to me, Dad, you're always telling me all these stories about the old people. You know so much, and you're a great writer. Write them down. So I sat down while I couldn't walk, and I wrote for 4 months, and I wrote 5 stories. And to be honest with you, I don't feel like I'm a writer or an author. I feel like I'm a conduit for the great spirit of Australia and the land, our sacred land, to tell the world and Australian people the beauty, the wonder, the colour and the magic of what it was like 50,000 years here before Captain Cook and co. got here.
Mm.
It was beautiful. I've had to research it, teach it.
You've had females influence you, your mum, your wife at the time that said to you, you know, you can get a job at the uni, you can start doing this and doing that, and you started studying. And now your stepdaughter's saying to you, write down those stories, Dad. You've had women influence you, which is fantastic because that's where the real strength of our people and our culture is. It's with our
women.
Well,
I actually sacked a real estate agent yesterday because he told me a very silly joke about women, and I sacked him and said, I'm sorry, mate, but all my life I've fought for gender and race equality, and that's not funny to me.
Good on you. Good on you, mate.
So, yeah,
you
right.
You walk your talk. You walk your talk, yes.
You gotta,
of course.
So, Tiger, basically I wrote out five stories, and it was like a conduit, man. I sat there and stuff flowed out of me that I'd never knew. Four of the stories, the inaugural Black and White competition came up to the state libraries in Queensland.
Yes.
And I was encouraged to put the first four stories in. I did. I put them in raw, which is what they wanted. And I was so encouraged because they gave two highly commended and two sort of little scholarships to teenagers, to youth, and to the adults they gave two highly commended. I got one, along with a young fellow who was a rapper or a poet, I think, in Cairns here as well. And I couldn't believe it because I just sat down and wrote these things and I got so much encouragement back. So for 3 years, I've been travelling Australia but I don't have a wife anymore, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to get away, and I took my dog and I travelled Australia. Well, I wrote these stories as I went around Australia while I was looking at the landscape. So I started back 50,000 years ago, basically, and I researched the climate and the environment of Australia, and then I put a fictional clan of warriors, male and female, who were trained from youth in spying, martial arts, breathing techniques, dreamtime magic, and a lot of other things. And I said that they were created by the dreamtime creation spirits because the language creatures, who are us, were starting to become selfish. And when they become selfish, they're not maintaining they're not doing what they were put here for, which was to maintain the links between heaven and earth, the great spirit and the mother, the rainbow serpent and the mullet. And I started back at 50,000 years ago and worked my way through up till today, where I've got an apocalypse story for the very last one in Australia as the last one that could happen any time. And so basically I've got... I think it might be easier if I just read out a little bit of the blurb.
Yeah.
Would that be okay?
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, Tiger. It goes, my clan's name and its mysteries have always been kept out of public knowledge and history in my home in Australia. It's the way the clan work. To do what they do, secrecy is a prerequisite to safeguard the work and people. For the first time in our long oral history, we have a means to reveal the long and intriguing history of our covert clan to other Australians, to the many new peoples who now call this majestic land home, and to the modern world at large. If you were born in Australia, you may have even heard such stories told around campfires and family meals about the Australian Aboriginal Magic Man, or Kadaicha Man, as our people named our clan many years ago. We call ourselves the Featherfoot. During the tales, you find that many of the elder warriors were advanced in spiritual travel and did not travel via Shank's pony, as walking is often called in Australia. Instead, they used the ancient dreamtime creation lines running across our country to move swiftly across their lands. Thus, in a mixture of fear and awe, the clan became known as the Featherfoot, half-man, half-spirit beings who could come and go at will, leaving no trace. Kadaicha spirit warriors, the Featherfoot. This pithy glimpse will give you some idea of the enigmatic clan, and you will discover a more intricate use of the unique gifts and talents as you read the chronicles and as the need for the unique, various individual skills occur. Please enjoy my people's pleasure in the telling of these legends. Although they are not in chronological order, they have been recorded as passed down for all to enjoy and to example the many unknown vibrant treasures of our first people and our land's vibrant past. It is a journey that will also take you into the mostly unknown moral and ethical heart of my people from Dreamtime to now. That's the blurb, basically.
And that leads into 10 different stories?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. So the stories are, the names of the stories, to give you an idea, the first one is called Nyala and the Circle of Stones. And, of course, I started it at Uluru, Heart Rock. The second one is, as I was explaining before, two sets of bones were found at Lake Mungo. Well, Goliath and the Lake Mungo mystery fills out those bones and says what happens to them and why they were there. The contest is a fishing contest that's happened in Queensland, 2020 before the present. Mm-hmm. And for sports people and fishing, it's quite an exciting one. Number four is Ancient Omen, the Arrival. And that's about the omen that the Featherfoot people knew that the ghost people were coming. And it's about a Featherfoot warrior called Yungaburra Bima, as he travels and meets Pemulwuy, who was fighting them at Sydney at the time.
The ghost people are the invaders, the whites, the Europeans.
Ghost people, yeah. Because of their white skin.
Their whiteness, yeah.
Looking like dead people. Fifth one is the Rainbow Serpent's Dance, and it tells what really happened to Ludwig Leichhardt when his team disappeared on their second exploration 165 years ago from the Featherfoot point of view. Number six is The Games, and it is the great game, about a story about the great games of prowess managed by the Cubby Cubby tribe of southeast Queensland and what happens at the games, like an Olympic Games for our mob. Seven is Shanks Other Pony, and Shanks Other Pony, you know, Shanks Pony used to be foot walking. Shanks Other Pony is time travel. Galku's Revenge is number eight, and it's a modern day Aboriginal detective whose wife is related to the Featherfoot and happens out in the middle of Australia at a little place called Punyu, which I've changed the name of in the story. Number nine is Troina, because I couldn't leave it out. Troina was the old name for Tasmania. And I run through a family who had to face what happened in Tasmania in those times when the people decided that they would try and make a big human fence and grab our people and put them on the island or kill them. I think heads were, you could take heads back in those days and get a reward. People's heads. And I couldn't leave it out. So that's the story. The tenth one is called The Seventh Veil, and it says, Earth, Australia, tomorrow, all over the known world. Old sages, some from ancient religions unheard of for generations, and including warlocks, wizards, shamans, hooded, robed, and naked mystics, have become coming forward one by one, all acquiescent with the fact that they will be ridiculed. In the land down under, Pem Wiatunga is happy as a pig in shit, he tells his family and friends. Unknown to Pem, the Featherfoot clan of his own ancient people have supported his own race to survive major calamities for over 50,000 years in this country. And soon he finds that travelling with a genuine Featherfoot warrior through a pre-apocalyptic down under towards a coming unstoppable catastrophe is not the worst that can happen to someone. And that's the 10, Tiger.
So you've got those 10 stories written, and you're ready to publish.
The last one's coming back from proofreader as we speak. So I used a professional proofreader to go through them.
What's the response from people around that you show, your proofreader or other people?
I had nothing but encouragement. I spent 2013 trying to find a publisher, pushing it and putting submissions into publishers all around Australia and around the world. Almost every single one got back to me when they say on their websites that they don't have to. They usually they won't get back to you. They'll just dump your stuff.
Mm.
They majority 90% got back and said, keep going. Too many books for us, but keep going. It's a great story and a genre that hadn't been touched.
Good one. Good encouragement.
Dorrance Publishing in the United States wanted to do it right then and there if I paid for the first run, and Book Guild in the UK were ready to do the same thing if I paid for the first run. And, of course, I wanted to try and get a traditional, book...
publishing deal.
Whatever they call it.
A publishing deal. Yeah.
But I've decided that I want the stories out there, so... I mean, one of the big reasons for this, as I've been writing them, is that we know reading and writing are advantageous to our people. And we're pushing our youth nonstop to read, and learn to read so that you can comprehend the English language and be confident in your social situation.
Yeah, live in two worlds.
But nobody of us have ever written anything to interest them.
Mm.
I'm hoping that this will be really taken up by our people in Australia and read. And I'm hoping that in future these stories will be read by a young person in a community to an old people who don't read English.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more for my own people to say how proud I am of where we came from than it is for me to be famous or anything like that. I just feel led to do all this, and I do feel like a bit of a conduit, to be honest with you.
Of course.
Rather than a talented writer or anything. I took up writing 3.5 years ago and I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
You're doing well. So have you come to the conclusion that you will self-publish now as opposed to getting a publisher?
Yes. I'm talking to Creative Space, I think it is, which is Amazon's publishing firm worldwide, and Book Baby Online, which is another way of doing it. And I'm looking at a promotion company in Australia actually promoting it on TV, radio and newspapers for 2 weeks before it comes out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's worth it.
When do you think it might
make a splash?
Yeah, of course. Oh, of course, it's got to be promoted. When do you think it may well be released, like people able to go into
it? I turned 60 in November this year, so I'm pushing for that.
Okay.
If that doesn't happen, then things haven't worked out, because I'm actually trying to use one of an Australian artist's artwork, which fits all my stories perfectly. Am I allowed to say his name? Or
if you wish. Right? If you've got someone you're working with, yeah, why not?
Mm. Yeah, well, it's Ainsley Roberts, the Australian painter who went out into the Australian landscape and lived out there and painted stories that he'd heard from local people while he was out there, and they fit my story. So I'm trying to organise the copyright for those now to go on. So there's quite a deal of work to do still, even now, but I'm just pushing it because I want to get the stories out there.
Yeah.
That's the main thing for me, and not so much for anybody else, but for my own mob. I love our people to get encouraged by this, and youth see fiction writing as a career path.
Okay. Yeah.
You know?
Let's fast forward 5 years. Fast forward 5 years. What would you like to see in regards to your book being available? Young ones in high school even and their families, like, accessing the book, reading the book. What do you want to see if we fast forward, say, 5 years, 3 to 5 years, as a result of you publishing late this year?
Oh, look, I'm hoping I believe that they'll be used in universities and schools in Australia and in other countries, to be honest with you.
That's the potential.
Even though they're fiction stories.
Yes,
because nobody's touched any of this before.
Right.
Nobody's touched any of that area. Nobody's... people write about what happened when the invaders hit here. People write about the terrible things afterwards and everything, but our people are much more than that. They're 50,000 years much more than that.
That's right.
That's older than the pyramids. It's older than the Bible stories. That's older than... Do you know that when David Unipon, my hero, one of my heroes on the $50 note, he said that he hoped our stories would be used. He, on his deathbed at 94, apparently, he said that on his his greatest wish was that our wonderful stories and our wonderful tales from the 50,000 years we've been here would be accepted, published, and used the same as Little Red Riding Hood, and other stories and myths and legends from all over the world are famous, but ours aren't yet. So it was one of the reasons that pushed me towards this, is that
good
such a great man, he could see ahead how powerful this would be, I believe.
Yeah. Yep, so you're honouring that dream of his.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So the next obvious question is, what next? Are you got plans to continue writing, to write, is there a...
I've got another 7 stories on the go now.
Okay.
Tiger.
All right, great.
And if it wasn't for this, what I'm trying to get out of my unit here and get some money together, I'd be into them right now. It's hard not to be writing.
Really, eh? Yeah, you're that driven.
Oh, it's just pouring out of me, Tiger, and these stories are just coming, and there's stuff, and that's what I said. I don't feel like a talented writer. I feel like a bit of a conduit.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. You obviously got the spirit of your old people sort of guiding you through, and
that's what it feels like to me. Absolutely, what it feels like, and whether people believe in this type of thing or not. The things that have happened to me recently, just take, for instance, this morning, I got up at 4 o'clock and tried to finish some work online that I hadn't been able to do because I'm cleaning and painting. I texted you, I emailed you, and you dropped someone out this morning. You lost someone this morning, and I was able to come in and do it. To me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, of course. There's no such thing as... what's that word? Or it's all meant to happen. It's not. What's that word? White people use, you know, or it's.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Coincidence. It's coincidence. You know,
fated
that's right. Yeah, it's not coincidence at all. You know, these things are meant to happen. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
that's what's happening, and I just believe it's time that these stories got into the world and to our own people. Because I see our 50,000 years as being quite. Amazing. I mean, there's nobody else that's lasted that long. There's nobody else that's had 600 tribes that didn't try and kill each other or turn one group into slaves.
Yes. Well, John,
there's nobody else.
When you think about it, we're the people that created art, the images. We're the first. We're the people.
We created negotiation between
exactly.
our tribes.
That's right. And then there's astrology, you know. Then there's astrology.
That's right.
Our people are the first, you know. So there are so much.
I just found apparently artwork that show in Sydney that in some of the caves that shows the constellations.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they thought only the Chinese knew about. Apparently.
Yeah. Yes. There's a hell of a lot. There's a very rich culture there, and it's great that you're able to.
I'm proud of it, and I'm excited by getting my what I know and what I my imagination says happened back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm totally excited about it, and I was just so proud and grateful for you putting me on this morning to do this. So my next step is trying to get all the copyright stuff. Permissions done and be ready to publish by November.
Yeah. That's fantastic, mate.
And that's in hardcover as well as online.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the moment, I'm doing it all myself, but I don't really care. I mean, this is more important. This is, to me, this is as important as my family, my children, if you understand how I feel about that.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And on that note, we'll wind up, but we'll stay in touch and assist with promotion, and we'll do another keep on chatting and get you back on air when you're when people can go and buy it and stuff like that. So we'll keep on talking.
Okay.
And I really appreciate your time with
us
today.
And blessings to all those wonderful people out there in that are listening today. And I hope that the Great Spirit blesses you and yours.
No worries, brother. Thank you very much. I think we are all blessed. It's fantastic.
I think we are, especially in Australia, mate.
You're not wrong. Yeah, yeah.
One thing before you go, hey, yeah. Tiger, Aboriginal people, I believe, have a responsibility to use those negotiation skills around the world. The people who are going to try and do negotiations at the moment in the Middle East and other places come from rich, privileged classes. Our people know exactly what it's like to be called black, to be murdered, to be poisoned, and to be chained. We're the people that should be doing the negotiations. We've got 50,000 years behind us, mate.
You're right there. All right, John. Hey, thanks very much,
Thank
brother.
You.
Good to talk to you, and good luck with it. Keep on going.
I will. Bye.
Good, bud. Have a good one. John Winnetong, Cubby Cubby Man, living in Cairns and doing a lot of writing, ready to publish. End of the year, should be out there on the shelves. We'll certainly keep you up to date on that one. But some interesting stories there. It's time to go to news. You all have a great day.